Now, most South Africans have been experiencing remote learning. Either you getting no learning at all and learning is remote, and if you're in the public system, you'll be struggling, I think, to be getting any kind of formal education right now. But what you're also experiencing if you are in a remote learning environment, particularly in private schools, is are you getting remote learning? Are you getting remote teaching? Are you getting online learning? Is there a difference between the two? Robert Paddock is the founder and chief executive at Valentia Institute. You guys do e-learning or online learning. Tell me the difference, Robert.
You know, Bruce, we would call what we do online learning. And I guess probably the biggest difference between remote learning and online learning is that remote learning is largely a replication of what happens in the physical classroom, but then taken into a rather more clunky online medium when you're trying to simply repeat what you do in the face-to-face classroom. Whereas online learning, by our estimation, is a highly integrated, very thoughtfully planned online learning experience that takes place over many years with a range of interactive content that you experience with live online in sessions where you're engaging with your fellow classmates, and you get to really make use of the rich and engaging online learning environment that can be created, but it's not just a replication of what happens in the face-to-face classroom through Zoom.
Why is that a mess? I mean, I'm calling it a mess because my personal experience of observing it happen in my own household is that it is not particularly conducive to a great learning experience. It is hectic. I mean, you've got teachers who are doing their level best, and bless them, they are working really hard. But with all the best will in the world, you cannot replicate a classroom scenario via a digital platform with half the kids who don't know where the mute button is, for argument's sake.
Completely. No, I think that's a really important point to make. And first of all, just to reiterate your point, there are teachers around the country and indeed around the world who are making heroic efforts to try and make a plan for their students online. But Bruce, this is a different discipline. I mean, one of my primary views on the challenge is that in the traditional classroom, we ask our teachers to perform a lot of different functions. So if we just have to think about disaggregating that role, we talk about teachers as subject matter experts. They need to be expert facilitators. They need to be curriculum designers. They need to plan assessments. They need to mark assessments. They need to be administrators. They are indeed sometimes social workers, counselors, sports coaches, et cetera, et cetera. This is a very long list of tasks. And when you think about trying to replicate all of those things that happen more seamlessly in the face-to-face environment, when we can get the small social cues, when we can see that student at the back of the classroom is somewhat disengaged, and I happen to know because I ran into their parent one afternoon that they might be having troubles at home. These are the sorts of intuitive feelings that teachers develop in the physical classroom that are a lot harder to replicate in the online environment if you haven't purpose-built the environment to give you that data. And so what online educators know very well is that you actually have to set up this online education environment very specifically to perform this function. You can't rely on the same data points to give you the rich information set that you need to do your job effectively as an educator. So as an example, at the Valentia Institute, we provide a different role for individuals who are designing and developing the curriculum. And that's in collaboration with graphic designers, animators, e-learning authors, learning designers. I mean, it's a whole discipline in and of itself. Then there's a separate team that deals with the facilitation of learning. So this is the live facilitation, live classrooms that are taking place online. Bruce, that's a whole discipline in and of itself. It's not just taking existing classroom-based teachers and shoving them into the online environment. It takes months of upskilling to get them to the point where they've got the capability to do that. Then there's a whole team dedicated to learning analytics, which is providing the teachers and the facilitators with those rich data points so that they can see that a student is at risk of falling behind and they haven't spent as much time as they should in the online campus. And then there's a whole nother separate team that deals with technical support and a whole nother team that deals with the role of mentorship for these students. And I could go on with this very long list, but really what I mean to illustrate is that when thoughtfully planned and executed, online education is very different from face-to-face education. If you don't take the time and the immense investment to set it up as such, it's the learners and the parents that end up suffering as a result. And again, what I'm not saying is that that teachers around the country are not doing their level best.
No.
I am saying, though, is that this is not a necessary and accurate reflection of what is very possible in the online education world, which is highly engaging, rich and interactive experiences where students are engaging with their peers from around the world, and they are achieving immense educational success.
Now, I mean, I see it in programs like, and I'm going to name a couple because just the ones with which I'm familiar, things like Mathletics, for example, is highly interactive, and you have kids who are playing against kids in all parts of the world, or at least they think they are, I don't know if they are, and competing, and it's all very enthusiastic, and it's wonderful, particularly if your kid's scoring well and they feel like geniuses. But is online or e-learning suited to every age group? I mean, can you do it for 6-year-olds as effectively as you can do it for 13-year-olds or self-motivated 20-something-year-olds who have been through a formal education process and are self-motivated to sit through modules and do the work and the extra reading that is required as part of an education?
Absolutely, Bruce. It's a really important question. And the one point I would make is that not all online education is made equal. So if we compare, as an example, Mathletics to what's being done at Valencia Institute, I'd have a very different answer for you as to what age bracket it is appropriate at. That said, my personal belief is that purely online education is far less suitable the younger the student is. So as an example, when you're in early childhood development, there is so much tactile development that's happening and so much social engagement that needs to take place in real time, in person, for that development to take place, that I believe that we would be doing our students a disservice if we had 5- and 6-year-olds sitting on computers all day long. Like we'd be missing out on a major part of their developmental process. My personal view is that from about the age of 11, around that sort of bracket, you can start effectively introducing online-only education. And importantly, you need to find meaningful reasons for students to come together, both in terms of the social engagement that they have online and in terms of the social engagement that they have in person. So as an example, at Valencia Institute, we strongly are pushing our students towards joining up at local sports clubs, local drama societies, music clubs, things that we can't reasonably facilitate in a highly effective way in the online medium. That said, in the online medium, they're still able to engage in virtual clubs. They're able to engage in very rich and active collaboration with their peers around group project work that takes place with regards to their formal studies. So there are ways and means, but there is no doubt that the younger you go, at least this is my belief, you need to be increasingly cautious about relying on online only.
But there is the logic, I suppose. Anybody who's ever, interacted with kids who are being homeschooled knows that kids who are homeschooled, who are participating in societies and clubs and sports outside of the home, are generally better adjusted than kids who are closeted at home and are expected to play tiddlywinks against themselves as an afternoon 6-hour activity, for example. There is a logic to this. If you're an educator and you're listening to this and you are trying to replicate the classroom via the digital environment and you're putting yourself under incredible duress, you're putting your students, particularly younger ones, under incredible pressure because they can't keep tabs on a schedule and don't know which way it's up, frankly. The temptation to message your mates because the old-fashioned, passing the note through to the back of the class now is some kind of digital hangout where you can, send emojis to each other. How do you do it better when you're constrained by limited tech? You've got Zoom, you've got a classroom, you've got a whiteboard, and you've got 20, 25 kids looking for your attention. Is less more in this context?
A couple of key points from my side, Bruce. The one is that if you don't take the time to effectively onboard your students onto the technology, you're going to pay the price for weeks and months from there. So the more time you can spend up front by actually spending time taking students through the if you're using Zoom as an example, exactly how to use the platform, how to mute their microphones, what your particular requirements are, spending that time up front will pay immense dividends. So that would be my first piece of advice. Take the time to effectively onboard. Then a piece of advice which would be more for the administration of the schools in question. getting your teachers to provide any sort of technical support is generally going to be a losing battle. It doesn't have to be a major investment, but getting someone who is a fae and more technologically inclined to play that role of technological support. Let them play that role to the students, let them play that role to the parents, and indeed internally to the teachers themselves. There is nothing more frustrating for teachers and for parents and for students when the darn tech just doesn't seem to work. And often that's a user issue, and there's an easy remedy. But if you don't take them methodically through it, and if you don't have support on demand when it's required, it can unnecessarily frustrate the learning process when there's actually a reasonably easy solve for that. So those would be my two primary pieces of advice. The other, I guess, is just lots of communication. So I think during this time, we are, in some ways, we are starved for information. And I'm seeing this particularly and getting a lot of feedback from parents who just want to understand what's next, what's coming, what are our plans, how are we planning to mitigate some of the challenges, how are we thinking about the next couple of, not just the next couple of weeks, but the next couple of months. The more information that you can give to your parent body and to your student body, even if that information says, these are the things that we're currently looking at, we don't yet have an answer for you, but please know that we're looking at them. The more communication, the better. I do believe we are all in this together. But if you don't communicate, it's very hard to feel like you're playing on the same team.
I mean, the kids in the outback of Australia, I don't know if they still do it. I'm sure that even they've advanced beyond it now, would do schooling via the sort of a walkie-talkie network, or what is it called? A radio network, and they would sit, and they would, and teachers would broadcast over radios. I mean, two-way radios, an extraordinary initiative in the outback in Australia in the 1970s. William Smith, the great teacher from Knysna, who took many young people in South Africa through their maths and science in the 1990s. He, an absolute legend. I mean, I advocated the other day for the SABC to be utilized in order to broaden the reach of education. I mean, we've got to be really thinking quite radically, have we not, about this problem, because not everybody in the country has got access to the tech that's required in order to deliver the stuff.
Absolutely, Bruce. I think this has got to make us fundamentally question where we are investing in the future of education, not just in terms of technology, but I would say more systemically, like how do we structure our learning organizations, our education institutions? What sort of functions do we need available and present so that the next time a pandemic rolls through, we don't necessarily have such a massive divide? And I guess one further point, the digital divide has never been more evident than it is right now. And I think about the amount of money that gets spent on building school infrastructure and about maintaining that school infrastructure. And I think that it's high time that we start taking a hard look at how we might redeploy some of that capital towards more scalable education solutions that can be COVID-proof and indeed can provide access for some of the country, if not the world's best teachers, to students all around South Africa.
Couldn't agree with you more. Robert Paddock, thank you. The founder and chief executive at Valentia Institute, taking us through online learning versus some of the experimentation that we're seeing at the moment. Well-intended experimentation, but it's stressful on kids, it's stressful on staff, it's stressful on absolutely everybody involved in the process, and just looking at better ways of doing it.